We continue the shiur in Gemara. Last statement we learned was a statement the Gemara said that there are three types of charm that Hashem injected into this world. He imbued people with a desire for these three items. One, he stated, was the place, the area, locality. People living in a certain area find this area more favorable to them than any other place out. Even though it might be a slum area, they still prefer their homes in this slum more than any other area because that's the nature. People like the place they live in. And of course, we stated the reason being that if it was not so, you would have all peoples in the world living in one single spot, the rest of the world would be uninhabited. So Hashem created this favor in the eyes of people, different tastes, that the whole world could become inhabited. Second is the chen, chen means charm, the chen that a wife finds in the eyes of her husband, even though in other men's eyes she would appear to be ugly and distasteful, in her husband's eyes she has found charm. We explain the reason there being, this must be so because 40 days before a person is born, is created, the announcement is made in heaven about whom this person is going to marry. In order to fulfill this statement of fate by Hashem, there must be a charm in that woman for this man specifically. Third item is anything that a person buys finds favor in his eyes more than anything else. His is more precious to him than that which is not his. Now, for this too, we have a very logical reason now for a statement we learned previously where the Gemara says there was a debate between Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel. A man marries a woman, the chaten and the kala, at the night of their wedding. It's a mitzvah to bring simcha to the chaten. So the Gemara says, Ketzad Meraktin Lefnei HaKala. What are you supposed to say in front of a kala? But Shammai say you're not supposed to praise the kala with qualities she does not possess because that would be telling a lie. You're not supposed to tell a lie. But Hillel say you're supposed to say kala na'a v'chasuda. This is a beautiful kala, a beautiful bride, in order to make the chatan feel happier that he has chosen well. Now, how can you tell a lie? But Hillel say the reason is that if a person already bought something, what's the sense of making him feel bad? You're supposed to praise the item he bought rather than to belittle it. Make the person feel good. The Ritva, one of the Rishonim, says the question that Shammai bring up, how can a person lie when one of the laws of the Torah is you're not supposed to tell a lie at all? The Ritva says, but we also have a statement in the Gemara which says that mutar leshanot bedvar shalom, where it's a question of keeping peace. Or making peace for the sake of peace, you're allowed to even tell a lie. So great is the mitzvah of peace that you're permitted to tell a lie. One of the rabbis of the Gemara, Rabbi Natan, says that it's a mitzvah to tell a lie for the sake of keeping peace. Here you want to make peace between husband and wife, between chatan and kala, between bridegroom and bride. How big that mitzvah is that you may even tell a lie and say that this bride is a beauty, even though she is far from that. But here, we can now understand, according to this statement, that it's not really telling a lie. Since Hashem has instilled in a person a nature that in his eyes, his bride, his wife, has charm, you're not telling a lie to the chatan. You're not telling a lie to the husband. Because of this nature, of his feeling that this item is one of beauty. And so too, as Bet Hillel said, if one buys something, he already bought it, should you praise it or belittle it? You can praise it. You're still not telling a lie because this is the third item that the Gemara says here, that a person who owns something, his item is more favorable to him than anyone else's. So again, you are not telling a lie because you're just following the natural instinct in a person as dictated by Hashem in these three items. Another item here, interesting point is, the reason the Gemara brings this point up is because we would have a question, a natural question. At Mount Sinai, Har Sinai, when Hashem gave the Torah to the Jews, the Gemara calls that the Chatuna, Kaviyachol, if we can use that term, the wedding between Hashem and the Jews. Hashem is the groom, the Jews are the bride. It means that the Jews, Kaviyachol, become the wife. And the marriage contract is the Torah. That means that they are wedded. Now, where is their place? Where is their homestead? Where does this heavenly union reside? In the land of Israel. And it's Israel is the home, Kaviyachol, the home of Hashem, the land of Hashem, the Eretz HaKodesh, the Holy Land. And there is where Hashem placed his bride to live in. Now, when the Jews were there, in Eretz Yisrael, and they turned against Hashem, they revolted, they rebelled, they were disloyal. They turned to idols, idol worship, which means that here is a case of a wife who committed open adultery. The Jews are wedded to Hashem, Kaviyachol, they turned away from Hashem to idols. This would automatically bring about a dislike, a distaste on the part of the husband, the part of the groom. Again, in this case, on the part of Hashem, we get to a point where he finds this wife so distasteful, Chas v'Shalom, the Jew so distasteful, and the land, that he would drive the Jews out of that land. He would never want to see this land again or have the Jews again as his wife. This is the reason the Gemara makes the statement here, reason that goes far deeper than the statement itself. Hashem created a chen, a charm, that cannot be destroyed. A charm that is so deep, a charm that a wife has for her husband. This means Hashem is telling us, never will this charm be lost to Hashem. A wife might be disloyal. She might do things to incite the anger of her husband. The Jews might commit sins against Hashem that could bring out his anger, Chas v'Shalom. That Hashem might thereby exile them from the land of Israel. He might destroy the holy temple and lay waste to the entire city of Yerushalayim, the entire country of Eretz Yisrael. But this is only temporary. The chen of the Jews, the chen of Eretz Yisrael, will never be wiped out completely. After a period of time, when the anger of the husband, the anger of Hashem subsides, he will bring back his favorite one, the one that has found eternal charm in his eyes, the Jews, to his favorite land, to Eretz Yisrael. This is the main point of the statement. Now, the Gemara says this was brought up in reference to the question of these 42 youths whom Elisha Hanavi had killed by looking at them angrily, whereby a miracle occurred where two bears came out of a forest and killed these 42 children. There were no bears, there were no forests, this was a miracle due to Elisha Hanavi's anger. And because these 42 insulted Elisha Hanavi, what was the reason for their insult? Because he had performed a miracle in making the water of their city sweet, water that could not be used. These 42 earned a good living by bringing in water from outside. Now he had frustrated them. He had spoiled a chance of making money. Therefore, they were angry with him and they insulted him. So his punishment was a very severe one. He punished them with death. Of course, it is true that first he looked at them carefully. He gave them a long, hard glance. As we said last time, that he looked and he saw that they were not fit to continue living. The Gemara says he looked and he slew them. What's this look? What did he see when he looked? The Gemara says, for one thing, he saw that they had long hair. The moment he saw long hair, he knew that these are incorrigible. They cannot be corrected anymore. That is a tum'ah that cannot be corrected, and therefore they could not live any further. More than that, he looked and saw he could foresee the future, that they would never become tzaddikim, and they'd never be born from them either. Generations later would all be nishayim. So there was no loss in having them killed. This is the story. Yet the Gemara says now that there were three times in Elisha HaNavi's life that he fell ill. He became sick. Three times, meaning one of the three was the illness from which he passed away. That was natural. The other two times, a person does not become ill unless there is a sin or a wrong committed. The Gemara says, what wrongs did Elisha HaNavi commit that caused him to become ill? One of them was, the first illness was due to the fact that he set these bears against these youths. He had these bears kill the youths, and therefore he was punished by becoming ill. Now what's wrong with that? After all, they deserved death for what they did. Going against a tzaddik like Elisha HaNavi certainly is punishable by death. What was wrong with it? Rabbi Natanzel says that the true tzaddik always seeks to bring close those who are far. The further the person is, the bigger the Asha, the more remote he is to anything, the more estranged he is from religion, that's the one that tzaddik should go after and bring him in. Take him in, teach him, and bring him to religion, instill in him a warmth for religion. Even if it seems impossible, even if it seems that he is completely gone, there is no such thing as yiyush, giving up hope entirely. You never give up hope on a Jew. Because of this, Elisha HaNavi became ill, which proves there was something wrong done. Second illness came because of the fact that he pushed aside his student, his closest student, Gehazi. He pushed him away with both hands. He refused to accept him close to him after Gehazi had committed a wrong. For this too, he became ill. The third illness was one where he passed away from. Now the Gemara says, let's go into that more in detail, the case of Gehazi, his student. The Gemara says, first, a statement of fact, each person should be aware of this fact, an important lesson, that if you want to punish someone, someone who's close to you, by repelling that person, then you do so with your left hand. Let your left hand push that person away from you, but make sure that your right hand draws that person close. So you drive the person away a little, but use more force in bringing that person close. Now, in other words, not as Elisha HaNavi had done to Gehazi, his student, where he repelled him with both hands. He used both hands to drive him away completely. Also, not as Rabbi Yehoshua did to his student, the unmentionable one, Yeshu. These two cases, they went too far in driving their students away. The Gemara says, let's study, analyze both cases. First, the case of Elisha HaNavi. What caused this expelling him completely? The time that Naaman, the general of Aram, this young general who became ill with leprosy, and at that time, just as now, true leprosy is incurable. Leprosy means, the Gemara says, one who is a leper is considered a corpse. One who is a leper means that he is dead. This Naaman was so upset over this because he was young, he had good looks, he had power, he had wealth, everything, and this leprosy meant the end of his life. He felt very badly about it. The Torah says that he had kidnapped or captured, taken captive, a small child, a girl from the Jews. And this girl, he overheard saying that there is a cure for leprosy by going to visit the Navi, the Jewish prophet Elisha HaNavi, who had miracle powers. Naaman, in desperation, decided to visit Elisha HaNavi, and considering the possibility that he might be cured, he took along with him a caravan laden with gold, silver, and fancy materials, silks, and so on. As a reward for Elisha HaNavi, should he cure him. When he came to Elisha HaNavi, he entered into his room. Elisha HaNavi said to him, I know why you came. as a prophet. I know the reason you came. I know who you are. And I have a cure for you. Go to the River Jordan and dip yourself 7 times in the Jordan River. You'll come out completely cured. Leprosy means the skin, the entire skin of the body turns snow white and flaky. It begins to flake and fall off. A person can easily see himself whether he has this disease or not. It's a horrible type of disease. The white itself is a horrible color in that case. And when Naaman heard these instructions, he walked out very furious. He was practically cursing at why he had made this long trip. He said, how can I be cured by bathing in the Jordan River, the filthy waters of the Jordan River, when I have already bathed myself in the spiced lakes of Damascus? Spiced waters, waters filled with spices that are health-giving, and I wasn't cured at all. Again, his servants told him, why not trust this tzaddik? Logically, the waters of the Jordan cannot cure you. It's the word of the tzaddik that does it. Just obey his words with faith, and you'll find yourself cured. So he decided to take that advice. He went to the Jordan River and dipped himself once, twice, 3 times. Each time he came, he found that there was no trace of a cure whatsoever. It was exactly as before. At least he was hoping to see a beginning of a change. 6th time he came up, he was exactly as the first time he had gone down. But he decided to go for the 7th one. He came up the 7th time, every vestige, every last bit of leprosy had disappeared. He was completely cured. He was so wild, he was so jubilant, so happy about this, that he went quickly back to Elisha HaNavi. He came into the room and he said to him, I beg you, I implore you, please take this caravan of gifts as pay. Elisha HaNavi said, definitely not. I refuse to accept any pay from you. All I want is that you should henceforth recognize and accept the power of Hashem. Stop, desist from worshiping idols anymore. To this, Naaman tentatively agreed. There's another story about some conditions he made. He still had some business dealings with the idols. One more time, that's a side item. The point here was he walked out very happy but disappointed in that he was so anxious to repay in measure a token payment for this miracle cure. But the Lishanavi definitely refused to take anything, and so he left slowly. He got on his horse, he rode off with his caravan, his servants, and behind the door, the Lishanavi's student, the one who served him. The best student is one who serves. As Yeshua, the student of Moshe Rabbeinu, says that his greatness was due to the fact that he served Moshe Rabbeinu like a servant. That's why he became the leader of the Jews afterwards. That's why Elisha HaNavi became what he was, because he served Eliyahu HaNavi, his teacher, his rabbi. He served him with manual type of services, pouring water for him, small things. That's why he was selected over all the other prophets at that time as the leader after Eliyahu HaNavi. Now, the next one in turn would be Gehazi, who served Elisha HaNavi throughout his life. But at this point, Gehazi heard the decision of his master, his rabbi, saying he would take nothing. Gehazi felt very badly about this. Why couldn't he take something after all? He's giving it free. Why refuse? Must be a mistake. He's doing wrong. So he waited until Naaman had left. Then he went running after him in the distance. He was sure he would not be seen by Elisha HaNavi. Naaman saw him. He leaped off his horse, recognized him as Elisha HaNavi's student, and he asked him what was up. Gehazi said, we have some guests, and if you could spare a couple of suits of clothing, some silks, brocades. Naaman was only too happy to give it to him. He begged him to take more. Gehazi said, just this, because he couldn't carry any more. He took this back with him. He went into the small hut where he stayed. He tried to sneak past Elisha Hanavi's room. As he walked past stealthily, he was stopped by Elisha Hanavi's voice, called to him and said, "Come in here." Of course, he dropped the package, came into the room, and Elisha Hanavi asked him, "Gehazi, where have you gone? Where were you?" Gehazi said, just here and there." So Elisha Hanavi said to him, "This is Kefira. You don't believe in my powers of prophecy? Though I'm in a closed room without windows, you don't believe that I could see from a distance? I could see a man jump off his horse and run towards you and give you these gifts? Because you have done this crime, because you have gone against my wishes, therefore you took the payment for the leprosy of Naaman. You took the silver and garments as payment for the leprosy. You have to take both the payment plus the leprosy. Naaman's leprosy will now become attached to you and to your children forever, for the rest of your life, the rest of your shortened life." At this point, of course, one thing remained. As a leper, it is the same as a person in Chedim. He is not permitted to stay close to the Jews. He is an outcast and must leave the Jewish camp. He was forced to leave. But a side point the Gemara mentions here is that, well, the Zohar Kadosh speaks about it more in detail and says that Elisha Hanavi said to Gehazi, "You're supposed to die twice because you committed two crimes. You committed a double crime against me. But because dying twice means in this world and in the future world, you're supposed to lose your Gan Eden too. Because you served me, that's going to save you, that you will still receive Gan Eden. You'll only die in this world and through leprosy, but you'll still have Gan Eden." Now, he still had Gan Eden, of course, at that time. Even as later on, Gehazi lost the Gan Eden too. Because at one time he was speaking to the king of Aram, the king of the Arab countries, and there he discussed the miracles that Elisha Hanavi had performed. And he discussed the miracle of his bringing back a child to life. He told the king, he noticed there's a woman there, this is the woman whose child Elisha Hanavi had brought back to life. The Gemara says he mentioned the word Elisha Hanavi without saying the word Rabbi. And this, the Gemara says, the penalty for that is losing Gan Eden forever. This is how Gehazi lost the Gan Eden, which he still had, he now lost. And the Gemara lists him as one of those who never got to Gan Eden. But back to this point in the story, the Gemara says now that what happened here was Gehazi had lost his life, but more important, he had lost his chance to be close to Elisha Hanavi. Now, by doing this, this is what the Gemara means now. By pushing Elisha Hanavi away with both hands, repelling him completely, he could have punished him in a manner where he'd be expelled, outcast for a short period of time, and then bring him back, let him do Teshuvah. But Elisha Hanavi closed the door to Teshuvah to him, because he could never come back to him since he was now a leper. Even as this was Elisha Hanavi's error, for this he paid with illness. Because, even as says that after a while it was too late. Elisha Hanavi went to Damascus, traveled there. Why? To try to bring Gehazi back, to make him do Teshuvah. He did try. But it was too late then, because he said to Gehazi, "Do Teshuvah." And Gehazi laughed at him and said, "I can't, because you yourself taught me that if a person commits sins, he can do Teshuvah. But if he commits sins, and he's a machti, also makes others commit sins, they close the door of Teshuvah to him." And of course, even that Gemara, which is true, it does say that, they don't give him a chance to do Teshuvah. This doesn't mean that the door of Teshuvah is closed. Even where the Torah itself says you cannot do Teshuvah, there is no such thing in existence. If a person insists, "I still want to do Teshuvah," he can do Teshuvah. There's no sin existing, no crime possible, where Teshuvah cannot erase that sin or crime. The power of Teshuvah is greater than any other power that exists on heaven or earth. But Gehazi stuck to this point, and so the fact that Elisha had repelled him for so long made him lose his chance to do the Shabbat in his own eyes, and that's how Gehazi was lost. The Gemara says, what did Gehazi do as far as making others commit sins? He himself turned away from Emunah. What did he do to others? The Gemara says there were three things that he did. First was that he took the calves, Yiravam ben Nevat, the first king of the 10 tribes, the one who had revolted against King Solomon, King Solomon's son, that is, divided the Jews into two camps, two tribes, two Shevatim, under Rechavam, the son of King Shlomo Melech. And Yiravam ben Nevat, first evil king, took the 10 tribes away. In order to ensure himself as king, he stopped them from going to the Beit HaMikdash by telling them, we have idols here, you can worship these idols, these calves. Now, Gehazi took these calves and showed them, proved them to be worthy of worshiping, perform a miracle with them. He had these calves suspended in midair, actually suspended without anything holding onto them. This was a miracle, people considered. So they worshipped it, meaning that he caused the Avodah Zarah of worshipping these calves. How did Gehazi play this trick? Very simple, the Gemara says. He placed a blanket over these calves, a blanket that cannot be seen, a sheet of metal over the calves. Very high up, he took a powerful magnet, one that cannot be seen. Now, a magnet can draw metal to itself, depending upon the power of the magnet. It can draw the metal up to itself, or it can draw it to a limited amount of space. The magnet is not strong enough, it will draw the metal up to a certain point in the air, it will remain suspended. So this is how Gehazi had these calves lifted up partway in the air, with the power of the drawing power of the magnet holding it suspended there. This is how he misled the people into worshipping these calves. Second thing he did was that he carved out the Shem, the name of Hashem which gives it powers, on the lips of these calves, and the calves, through the power of this miracle, began to speak and said the words of the 10 commandments. First, 2 of the 10 commandments, which says, I am Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Lo Yehi Elecha, that these calves said the words of the 10 commandments, you have to worship them. Third item was the fact that he drew away from Elisha HaNavi the rabbis and students that came to study from him. This was the strongest, worst part of it, because this means he had already hurt the top, the elite, the best of the solet, it's called, the finest of the Jews at that time, best students. He stopped them from coming to Elisha HaNavi, and he lost many students that way. These are the sins he made others commit. He made the Nishayim out of many Jews. For this, Gehazi said, I cannot come back to you. I cannot return. I cannot do Teshuvah for this. And, of course, the Gemara says the reason for this. There is a logical reason why a person who makes others commit sins cannot do Teshuvah. Cannot means that he will not do Teshuvah. He can, but he will not get to do Teshuvah. This is because it would not be proper, it would not be fair that he, if he does Teshuvah himself, will go to Gan Eden, and the ones he made commit sins, his students, should go to Gehinnom. It's very unfair that he made others become an Eshaim, he should be sitting in Gan Eden. Therefore, it's worked out in such a manner that he will never get to do Teshuvah. Of course, if he insists, if he battles, he wants to do Teshuvah, nothing can stop him. But it will work out that way, that to be fair, that he will not be in Gan Eden while students are in Gehinnom. So this is how Elisha HaNavi acted against Gehazi, driving him away with both hands, forcing him away. This is where the Gemara says that was Elisha Navi's mistake. If you want to punish somebody, punish with your left lightly. Left is the weaker hand. Punish very lightly, but make sure that afterwards you spank with your left, but pat nicely with your right. Bring the person back. This was the case of Elisha Hanavi and Gehazi. Another Gemara says, second case, second example, the Gemara gives about driving a student away was with Yeshua and his student, his famous unmentionable student, whose name cannot be mentioned today, was also a very close student of his, very learned, very high in knowledge, naturally, and high in knowledge of in depth in Kabbalah, heavenly secrets. Now, at that time, this is a time when King Yanai had killed all the rabbis, most of the rabbis of the Gemara. Rabbi Yeshua had escaped and gone to Egypt, Alexandria. He settled there until this Holocaust was over, and he was sent a note telling him that it is a peaceful time in Eretz Yisrael. He can return, come back to Israel. And so he journeyed back from Egypt to Israel. On the way, with his loyal, trusty student, the unmentionable one, he stopped off at an inn. Now in Hebrew, the word for inn is achsanya. Achsanya means two things. It means the inn itself, and Baal achsanya means the host. But many times we do not use the word Baal. Just the word achsanya alone is used for host. In other words, inn and host have the same word in Hebrew, achsanya. The people there treated Rabbi Yeshua with the greatest respect, the host. The host and hostess treated Yeshua with the greatest respect and with the best type of service possible. And while sitting at the table, Rabbi Yeshua said, what wonderful service, what a beautiful achsanya. Meaning, this inn is so beautiful, and how wonderful the service here is, how nice it is to stay here. His student said to Rabbi Yeshua, you call that beautiful? I think the eyes are ugly. She has ugly eyes. Rabbi Yeshua was shocked. He shuddered and said, you rasha, you suspected me of speaking about a woman, describing the beauty of a woman, chas v'shalom. For this, you are in chedem. Chedem means he's ostracized, and he must stay away from him for an indefinite period of time until the chedem is removed. Generally, a chedem is for 30 days. But when the chief rabbi places a chedem, it cannot be removed unless the chief rabbi removes it himself. How can it be removed? If the person comes back after 30 days, and he must stay at a distance of 4 amot, 4 cubits, because he cannot come within 4 cubits of any person, at a distance he can ask, he can plead for clemency to have the cheder removed. Now this Yeshu, the mentioned one, came to the Yeshua a number of times, and he was still very angry with him, and he refused him completely. Motion, I don't want to see you. I refuse to talk to you. He insisted, came back, and one time he came to him, and Yeshua decided that it was time to take him back, because he had suffered enough. But at the moment that Yeshua was saying Kriyat Shema, he couldn't speak. So when the student came, he saw him, he motioned to him, a sign, wait. The student took that sign, meaning go away, leave and don't come. This was the final time that he felt he'd come to him, and because he was driven away, now he decided to turn away completely. With that, he committed the type of sins that Gehazi had committed, but in much larger form. First thing he did was, in front of Rabbi Yeshua, he took a beam brick form, placed it up, and bowed down to it to show this was the beginning of his worshiping, of his idol worship. Then he went out to mislead people in large numbers, and of course the damage done exists until today. We have all these characters, false leaders of religions today, due to his act. He's conquered the hearts of minds, destroyed the minds of millions of people, hundreds of millions throughout these generations. The result of his actions, we know, we learned in the Medan Gitin, what happened to him when he left this world, finally, his trial in heaven, what the decision was in heaven. At any rate, all this came about, though, indirectly or directly, by the fact that Yeshua had repelled him at first and refused to accept him in Teshuvah. This, the Gemara says now, this is a lesson. Never be too harsh with any person, no matter how bad they are. If they want to return, you drive them away with your left hand softly. They stay away, that's their hard luck. But if they come back, have your right hand ready to draw them in. Take them back, because remember that Hashem too, with his right, was more justified in being angry at anyone who does something against him. And yet Hashem uses this same tactic. He punishes with his left hand, with Kaviyachol, with the left, punishes, but if a person does Teshuvah, no matter what sin he committed, Hashem will bring that person back. That's why we say in the Tefillah of Kippur, Ata Noten Yad LaPoshim. The Ilah, we say, Hashem, you put your hand out to receive the Poshim. Poshim means the worst type of sinners. There are Chotim, ones that commit sins Bishogeg, unintentionally. There are those who commit Averot, Avonot, intentional sins. Poshim are those who commit sins for spite. Most evil, spiteful type of sinners, Hashem still puts his hand out to draw them, bring them back to him, if they return with Teshuvah. Then it says here, this is a lesson for every person to know. Never repel a person too much. Be prepared to receive him and take him back. Then it says now, as a general rule, there are three in general that a person must repel, even though they did nothing wrong. He has to repel them, but also with his left hand, and use his right to draw them close. First one is the Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara means, Yetzer Hara is the evil inclination to commit sins. There are many types of sins in existence, but the primary sin, the main sin that exists, for which the Yetzer Hara was created, the main test that a person is born for, comes to this world, is to withstand this one Yetzer Hara, this Satan, whose mission in life is to trap, to ensnare a Jew in committing this one sin that is above all, the sin that is kolel, and encompasses all other sins. It is called the sin haklali, the all-encompassing sin, that is the desire of committing a sin with women, whether the sin is done physically, whether it is done orally by speaking about this topic, using profane language, dealing with the topic of sex, or whether it is done even without action or speech, just in thought, a person thinking thoughts that can arouse him, as a shalom, or looking, just with his eyes, seeing things that can arouse him, this is the basic, all-encompassing sin. So in this case, the Gemara says, this is the Yetzer Hara, this is the prime evil which a person came to this world to be tested in. If he overpowers the Yetzer Hara in this one respect, if he is victorious, only then is he considered a tzaddik. Yosef had tzaddik, the one who earned that title, is because he overcame the Yetzer Hara in this one respect. So even in this case, the Gemara says, a person should repel the Yetzer Hara with his left hand. Remove him from you, but you still have to have the right hand to bring close, because you still must have that warm family life of husband and wife. There it is permissible. A wife, too, should be moved slowly, softly away, which means that even where it is kasher, even a husband and wife, where it is legal, still it is sinful for a person to overdo, to overindulge. It must be very limited. The Gemara says that a Talmid Chacham is together with his wife only at limited times. But then the right hand must bring close. To bring close means to show affection, and that there must be this relationship in order to perpetuate the race, to perform the very first mitzvah, the Torah. So even this Yetzer Hara, this one so-called evil, must be indulged in, but for the sake of the mitzvah. So the left repel, left means a sinful side, the right, the good side of the mitzvah, bring close. For the sake of the mitzvah of having children, then there should be a closing in of this item, purifying the Yetzer Hara, making it into something of Kiddusha. Second item is, and of course this speaks about the Yetzer Hara, and both these three items, we combine two, Yetzer Hara and Isha, are two of the three items, because both are actually one. The Yetzer Hara is the actual evil inclination, the angel of evil. The Isha, the woman, is the tool that the Yetzer Hara uses mainly. These two items a person should repel, but bring close where this mitzvah involved. Third item is a child. Small child, Rabbeinu Zal stresses this point very much, that for the good of a child, there are some people who feel that there must be a closeness between parent and child, between father and son, to avoid a generation gap. They should both play ball together, spend a lot of time together. This way, there'll be a warmth between these two generations, the closest devotion between father and son. The Yemenis says this is not so. Being too close to a child constantly will do more harm than good. A father should hold a child at arm's length, repel him, not to be too close to him constantly, but that's with the left hand. The right hand should bring him close. Always be ready to bring him close when the child needs this comfort of a parent, a father. Especially, this means, repel a child. How could you do that? The answer is that when it comes to the most important mitzvah of bringing up a child, which is teaching a child Torah, there the Mishnah says, Heve gola, let me come Torah. The best place where you can succeed learning Torah is away from home. A person can have much more success in the study of Torah if he's away from parents, away from home. So remove the child from your premises for the sake of study of Torah, which means he doesn't have to go 1,000 miles away. It can be even in the same neighborhood, but go to a yeshiva rather than have him study Torah at home, be much more successful. So here too you say, drive the child away very lightly, very softly, and very caressingly. Be prepared in a moment to use the right hand, the more powerful hand, to bring him close if any need shows up, and with which to show him the warmth of a parent, the parental love for a child. These are related to the first statement. The Gemara began with the fact that a person should always be sure, when he drives any person away, use the weaker hand and bring them close with the right. The Gemara says that we started originally the topic of Egla Arufa, the calf whose head is chopped off. When they find a corpse outside of a city, they cannot identify the murderer. You don't know who the murderer is, so the elders of the closest city have to bring this korban as a sign of forgiveness. They were not guilty in failing to perform the mitzvah of levaya, accompanying this person, the stranger, as he left the city, which would have made him immune to any danger. The Yemenah says that there came a time when this korban was voided. They stopped bringing this korban. If they found a corpse, they would not bring this korban anymore. When did that time come? Time came when the people were not as pure, as wholesome, and as good as before. There was an increase in the number of murders being committed, to the extent where they knew the famous murderers who were responsible for these deaths. Now, since they now knew the killers, you cannot bring an Egla Arufa, a calf. that's brought only where we do not know who killed the victim. In this case, since we knew now who the killers were, therefore they, and there was such an increase of murders, therefore they stopped this law of Egnat Ufak completely. There was one specific murderer that you might have mentioned, Salazar ben Dinay, was known also as Trina ben Prisha, two names that have no similarity. And yet this teaches us, the Gemara says, the beginning of the alias, where a killer would use a different name, and this of course is generations, this has been adopted by criminals. The Gemara says too that the waters that were used to determine the purity of a wife whose loyalty was in doubt was also stopped, because that was done only when there was doubt. Later on, the sin became so prevalent that there was no use in having these waters anymore. The reason is that the morals of generation has kept on deteriorating and still do so until Mashiach comes. Mashiach will come, he'll cure all these ills. We should be zochet to see him coming now, purify everyone and